Chapter 2. The Early Days of Britain. The Celts of Britain. After the Western Roman Empire fell, all of the countries that had once belonged to Rome were free of Roman rule. One of those countries was Britain. Do you remember flying over Britain on your magic carpet? The Roman soldiers in Britain were fighting fierce, dangerous warriors who were painted blue. These warriors were called Celts. The Celts lived in Britain before the Romans invaded the island. They weren't happy to see the Romans arrive. And even though the Romans set up camps and towns in the south part of Britain, they never managed to conquer all of the Celts. When the Western Roman Empire fell, the Celts drove the last Roman soldiers out of their country. Now Britain was theirs again. The Celts were proud of their fighting strength. They praised men who had courage in battle. They sang songs and told stories about great warriors. Specially trained singers called bards learned stories about the chieftains and battle heroes of long ago. The stories weren't written down. Instead, bards learned them from each other and memorized them so that they could be told again and again. These stories told Celtic children that it was good to be strong and warlike. One story told around the fires of the Celts was of Craith and his companions, three warriors with special powers. The story might have sounded something like this. One day, the warrior Craith said to himself, "I am a great fighter and have never lost a battle, but I am lonely. I want to marry a woman with hair as black as a raven's wing, skin as white as snow, and cheeks as red as blood. But the only woman as beautiful as all that is held prisoner by the great giant Fovor of the Mighty Blows at the end of the world." So Craith set off to fight the giant Fovor and rescue the beautiful woman who was the giant's prisoner. As he walked along the road, he saw a warrior standing at the roadside with a rock in his hand. "What are you doing with that rock?" asked Craith. "See that bird sitting on the topmost twig of the tree at the end of the world?" the warrior said, pointing. "I'm going to throw this rock and knock it off and eat it for my dinner." Craith squinted, but he could see nothing. "You'd better come with me," he said to the warrior. "I could use a companion with eyes as good as yours." And so the two men walked along. Soon the two of them saw a warrior lying on the ground with his ear pressed into the dirt. "What are you doing?" Craith asked. "Oh," the warrior said, "I'm listening to the grass grow down at the end of the world." "You'd better come with us," Craith said. "Your hearing might help us in our quest." And so the three men walked along. Soon they heard a noise behind them. Thump, thump, thump. They turned and saw a warrior coming up fast behind them. He was hopping on one foot, and his knee was bent so that his other leg was tied up behind him. "Why don't you untie your other leg?" Craith asked. "Oh," the hopping warrior said, "if I did that, I would run so fast that I would soon be at the end of the world, and then where would I go?" "Come with us," the three said, and they walked on towards the end of the world. Soon the castle of the giant Fovor of the Mighty Blows came into sight. The warrior Craith and his three companions stood beneath the walls and called up, "Giant! Giant Fovor! We've come to rescue the woman with hair like a raven's wing, skin like snow, and cheeks like blood. Set her free." When the giant heard them calling, he laughed. "Bring me three bottles of water from the well at the other end of the world," he shouted out his window. "Then I'll let her go, I swear." "Go and get the water," Craith said to the hopping warrior. The warrior untied his leg and set his foot on the ground. Instantly he was gone. No more than a moment passed and he was at the well, all the way on the other end of the world. He filled his bottles and started back. But halfway there he thought, "I'm going so fast that I'll be back before they can blink. I might as well sit down and rest a moment." He sat down under a tree to rest, the bottles of water by his side. But the sun was warm. The turf beneath him was soft, and soon he fell fast asleep. Back at the giant's castle, Craith was growing restless. "Where is he?" he asked his other companions. The warrior with the keen ears lay down and pressed his ear against the ground. "I can hear him snoring halfway around the world," he said. "Here, you with the eyes, throw a rock to wake him up." So the warrior with the sharp eyes peered halfway around the world and saw his friend dozing by the roadside. He lifted a rock and threw it. The rock flew through the air for hundreds of miles until it hit the sleeping man, ping, right between the eyes. He woke up with a start. "I've been asleep," he exclaimed. "I'd better go back with this water." And he scooped his bottles up and began to run. A moment later, he was at the giant Fovor's castle, with the water from the well at the world's other end. The giant Fovor was furious to see that his task had been done. But he had given his word, and so he had to free the beautiful woman with hair black as the raven's wing, skin like snow, and cheeks like blood. And Kraith married her, and they lived happily ever after. And always after that, the three warriors with the keen eyes, the sharp ears, and the quick feet lived with Kraith and went with him into battle, and together they could not be defeated. Barbarians come to Britain. The Celts who lived in Britain didn't all belong to the same kingdom, and they didn't all obey the same king. Britain was full of different tribes of Celts, and each tribe followed a different king. Old, old stories tell us that one of these kings was named Vortigern. Vortigern ruled a wealthy, powerful tribe of Celts in the middle of Britain. His people obeyed him, and the warriors who fought for him followed his commands. But Vortigern still wasn't happy. Other tribes of Celts from up north kept attacking his kingdom, and Vortigern was tired of fighting them off. He wanted help. Vortigern sent a message across the North Sea to barbarian tribes called the Angles and the Saxons. "Come and help me fight against my enemies," he said. "If you do, I'll give you land to live on here in Britain." So the Angles and the Saxons came across the North Sea into Britain and helped Vortigern fight his enemies. They liked Britain, so they settled down and stayed there. They sent word back to their friends, "Come live in Britain with us. There's plenty of room here." So more and more and more Angles and Saxons sailed across the North Sea to Britain. The whole middle part of Britain filled up with Angles and Saxons. The Celts didn't like all these barbarians in their country, but there were so many Angles and Saxons that they couldn't drive them all out. Soon the south and east part of Britain was completely occupied by Angles and Saxons. They divided the land into seven kingdoms. Today we call this part of Britain England, a name that comes from the word Angle. We call the people who live there Anglo-Saxons. Poor Celts! First the Romans attacked them, now the Anglo-Saxons had driven them out of their own land. Some of the Celts decided to make the best of it. They married the Anglo-Saxons and lived with them in peace. But other Celts retreated up into the north and west of Britain to live by themselves. Today we call the countries where the Celts lived Scotland, Ireland, and Wales. Do you remember that the Celts told stories to each other rather than writing them down? The Angles and the Saxons didn't do very much writing either. They didn't write down their history. They didn't write down their stories. And they didn't keep records of what they did every day. So although we know that the Angles and Saxons lived in England for a long time, we don't know what they did during all those years. This time in England is called the Middle Ages, or the Dark Ages. It is a dark time to us because we can't read about what happened in the seven Anglo-Saxon kingdoms. The only stories that we have from this time are stories that were passed down from one bard to the next by word of mouth. Beowulf, the Hero. The Anglo-Saxons told stories about their heroes just as the Celts did. One of these stories was about a monster named Grendel and the great warrior who conquered him, Beowulf. The story of Beowulf is one of the oldest stories in the English language. It may have been told and retold for years before it was finally written down. The story was written in poetry, because poetry was easier to remember and perform for other people. The whole story of Beowulf is long and complicated, but here is a shorter version of the story for you to listen to. Hrothgar was king of a whole host of men who fought for King Hrothgar again and again. Their strength and their courage was well known to all, so Hrothgar decided to build them a hall. It was hung all with tapestries, roofed all with slate, heated by fires enormously great. Each night of the week his men gathered there to feast and to sing and to put away care. Then they unrolled their blankets, slept next to the fire, while torchlight streamed out from the hall's highest spire. Now this hall of the king stood on high solid ground, with safe friendly fields and great houses all round. But far, far away, over swampland and heath, lived a monster named Grendel with sharp claws and teeth. He was hairy and hideous, tall as two trees, the biggest of men only came to his knees. He crawled up to the hall while the weary men slept, eased open the door, and through it he crept. He picked up a warrior and ate him right there, then seized 15 more and ran off like a hare. The men tried to follow his tracks on the ground, but soon came to a river where none could be found. In the morning, the warriors mourned their dead friend and swore they would bring these attacks to an end. But although in the daytime they wanted to fight, their courage all trickled away in the night. Again and again Grendel broke through the door, pounced into the crowd, and ate up some more of the men gathered there, and day after day Hrothgar's warriors failed to keep him away. They were tired and frightened and lost all their pride as news of their troubles spread out far and wide. Then Beowulf, mightiest man in the earth, a fierce, famous fighter of very great worth, heard that Grendel attacked Hrothgar's hall every night, and that Hrothgar's strong fighters were too scared to fight. He gathered his clan with their sharp swords and spears and set off for the hall where the men nursed their fears. Hrothgar was glad to see all those strong men. He thanked them for coming again and again. He said to them, "Welcome, Beowulf and all. Tonight all of you can sleep in my hall. When the monster arrives with his heart set on sin, he will find you in there with all of your kin. You can fight with him then. Do you need anything? Sharper swords?" But Beowulf said to the king, "Don't worry, we'll stay here with never a care. As a matter of fact, it wouldn't be fair to use swords to conquer this beast from the heath. He doesn't have weapons, just claws and his teeth. So I'll take off my armor and leave off my sword and fight with bare hands. Otherwise I'd be bored." Beowulf and his men then lay down on the floor, turned out all the lights, and locked the great door. They waited for Grendel, pretending to sleep. Then out of the darkness, so thick and so deep, came the sound of the monster approaching the hall. He howled and brought fear to the hearts of them all. The door made of iron was closed, locked, and barred, but the monster destroyed it without breathing hard. He grabbed a plump warrior, got ready to feast, but Beowulf seized the arm of the beast and started to twist it with all of his might. So then Grendel turned on him, ready to fight. But Beowulf twisted the arm yet again, while Grendel howled out with the terrible pain. He screamed and he howled, but he still couldn't flee. Beowulf's muscles were something to see. Then Beowulf pulled once again on the arm, and it popped off at once, causing Grendel great harm. Yelping, he galloped right out of the door, leaving his arm lying there on the floor. When the warriors saw what their leader had done, they cheered. Then they followed where Grendel had run. The monster's great tracks led them down to a pool where the dank mists had settled, all slimy and cool o'er the water's black surface. Engulfed there they found the body of Grendel, who jumped in and drowned. "He is dead," they rejoiced. "Let's have a great feast. No more will we dread the approach of the beast." So with mirth and great glee, they brought food to the hall, and they hung Grendel's arm way up high on the wall, and they ate, drank, and sang till the evening grew old. Then Hrothgar gave Beowulf armor of gold, and a bard lauded Beowulf mighty of hand, and his fame was eternally sung in that land.